Okay, yesterday I got a call from Jimmy Barnes. I was headed to the airport, and I got some horrible news. He said he had some horrible news for me, that he'd just been served by the Kentucky Race Commission, that Medina Spirit, our Derby horse, had been tested positive for 21 picograms of betamethasone. And all I can tell you is that betamethasone, even though it's an allowed drug, therapeutic medication, we did not give it. My veterinarian, nobody here, that matter of fact, Medina Spirit has never been treated with betamethasone. So I cannot believe that I'm here before you guys. I never thought I'd be here. Yesterday, I got the biggest gut punch in racing for something that I didn't do. And this is really, it's disturbing. It's an injustice to the horse. I feel like, you know, you win a race, and you're still not, to me, I don't know what's going on in racing right now, but there's something not right. And I don't feel embarrassed. I feel like I was wronged. And we're gonna do a complete, you know, our own investigation. We're gonna be transparent with the Racing Commission, like we've always been. We're gonna show them everything. One thing about it, in California, everything is documented every day, what the horses get. This horse was never treated with that. And he's a great horse. He doesn't deserve this. He ran a gallant race. And to me, I just feel, you know, like this last 18 months, what I've gone through, and it's just like, all of us right here. You just imagine yourselves going to work every day, and if they tested you every day for these levels, these contamination levels, and they told you if you tested positive, you were going to be fired. That's the way I feel. I do not feel safe to train. It's getting worse. And to me, you know, going forward, I mean, how do I enjoy, you know, to train? How do I, you know, move forward from this, knowing that something like this can happen? And it's a complete injustice. And but I'm going to fight it tooth and nails, because this horse, you know, I owe it to the horse. I owe it to the owner. And I owe it to our industry. And our industry needs to step up. And we need to do a better job in racing. There's something wrong right now with it. I've been talking about it. Nothing seems to be going done about it. But these contamination levels. And I'm not a conspiracy therapist. I know everybody's not out to get me. But there's definitely something wrong. Why is it happening, you know, to me? You know, there's problems in racing, but it's not Bob Baffert.
He came out hard and he came out fighting. Bob Baffert, one of the world's most successful trainers, certainly the world's most identifiable conditioner of the thoroughbred racehorse, seeking to defend his reputation. After the rags-to-riches story of his seventh Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit threatened to end in tatters. The horse's post-race sample returned a positive. It contained 21 picograms, as you've just heard, of the drug betamethasone, most normally used, quite legitimately, in training, intra-articularly, to treat joint inflammation. It is not, however, allowed in any quantity in Kentucky on race day. But intriguingly, as you've heard, Baffert says this horse has never been administered with this drug. His flat denial is a high-stakes defense. It pits his reputation, already significantly questioned by sections of the industry after a series of high-profile positives through the last 18 months, against the reputation of Kentucky, the Derby, and the sport itself. In choosing to hold this press conference outside his barn at Churchill Downs, where he travelled from his home in California overnight in the presence of his attorney to assemble journalists that he had mustered, Baffert immediately put himself on the front foot and set the news agenda. As I speak to you now, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission has issued no formal statement. However, Churchill Downs, the racetrack, has issued a statement, and they have suspended Bob Baffert from making entries at their racetrack until further notice. In invoking that emergency power, they have now presented a quandary to First Group and the Maryland Jockey Club, who administer the Preakness Stakes due to take place at Pimlico this Saturday. Should they follow suit and reciprocate? Could there be a Preakness without the Kentucky Derby winner, even if the split sample, the B sample, hadn't come back? What are the legal technicalities involved? And once again, does this expose the frailties of this disjointed regulatory system in the United States when one state doesn't automatically reciprocate the judgment, emergency or otherwise, of another one? As Maryland knows, it's got deliberation to do. It has shunted the draw back a day to give itself a little more breathing space. Whether subsequent events confirm today's findings or whether Baffert's robust and passionate defence is somehow borne out. The sport of racing, after a weekend full of hope, of a full-throated crowd in the glorious sunshine at Churchill Downs, just 7 days later, finds itself plunged into the most sorry mess. Well, Pat Cummings is the executive director of the Thoroughbred Ideas Foundation, which is based in Lexington, Kentucky, and has long been an advocate for wholesale reform of regulation across the United States. Pat, first, what was your reaction to today's news?
Well, certainly sad, Nick. The overall experience of this is just another blow to customer confidence. There have been many of them over the past, say, 10, 20 years in the sport across American racing, and we want a better future than the current situation we have now, and it's going to take serious reform. And so anytime anything like this happens, and you know that the confidence of racing's customers, the horse players, and all of the stakeholders up and down the sport has been hurt again, it's just another body blow that you wish you didn't have to take.
Let's break this down. What do you make of Bob Baffert's press conference, his self-instigated press conference to reporters at Churchill Downs, where he arrived this morning at 9:30 Eastern?
I thought it was certainly the smart thing to do if you're Bob Baffert, to try and get out in front of it as much as you can. And from a PR perspective, I thought it worked well for him to basically control the first issuing of the facts. I also think it is highly problematic that in a sport where so many of the participants are tested in some way, shape, or form, that the results that we were hearing for the first time, what the overage was, the medication involved, and a strong and forceful denial straight off the bat, all were coming from the person who was essentially being accused. And that is, I think, symptomatic of the greater ills of the way in which American racing is both regulated at a state-by-state level and the lack of control that the tracks have in the matter, too, because it is not necessarily up to the operator to come forward and do this. This is a regulated wagering event, and the rules of the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission come into play, and the person being accused has come out and tried to own the situation straight from the start, and everything thereafter will be reaction on the part of the regulators. And that is a fairly troubling kind of series of events if you're trying to clean up the sport and to operate it on a level playing field.
So it's standard practice for the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission and most regulators around the world not to release information such as this until a split sample or a B sample has come back and confirmed the positive. However, do you concede that the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission should have been prepared for Bob Baffert and his legal team putting this information in the public domain and had been ready with a response to that, or at least a version of events that actually makes what happened official? There is no officially sanctioned version of events as things stand, and we are now, 6 hours after the fact?
Yeah, 100%, Nick. You would like to think that there is undoubtedly a need to have some special handling of the samples from the Kentucky Derby and the biggest day of the year, and the biggest race perhaps in the world on an annual basis, certainly one that draws a tremendous amount of attention, and the valuations of horses that emerge out of this from a breeding standpoint. This is a multi-hundreds of millions of dollar event, not just the event it takes place, but all of the ramifications thereafter. You would like to think that the regulatory body would have some sort of handling of this matter that would be considered perhaps above and beyond the norm, that there would be a special event procedure in place of checking these samples and clearing these samples and a way to deal with that if there was an unusual finding or an adverse finding, which is clearly, you know, there obviously something happened in that respect here. But even some of the facts that Baffert revealed, or at least Baffert's version of the facts that were revealed, also seemed to be a little bit odd in the sense that Baffert himself was not the person that was contacted originally, but the assistant trainer Jimmy Barnes was the one contacted. At least that's what Baffert said in the piece earlier today. So it is not a measure, you know, this is not going to build confidence that the sport is being regulated to a level that it should be expected to be regulated at in this day and age. And this is not unique to Kentucky in this country. This is something I think that would apply to just about every other state with a few exceptions. For example, New York, where in major races with prize money of $1 million or more, the state releases the veterinary records for the period leading up to that race. So we might be able to have a look at that at Belmont Park, for example, than we do, say, here in Kentucky, for this example. So it does really exemplify the patchwork quilt of regulations, different approaches that we see in America.
Has it occurred to you to ask the question, why didn't this positive sample show up in a pre-race test, given that all Kentucky Derby horses are supposed to be tested on the premises before they run?
Again, another interesting fact that Baffert released to that, Nick, is that he reports that the horse received some sort of pre-race or out-of-competition test on April 18th. Now, again, the fact that you don't have more detail as to when all of the horses in the race are tested before the race, was that the official pre-race test, or was that simply an out-of-competition test before the event for someone who was expected as a possible participant? We don't have that detail. That information isn't normally released as part of the overall information from the regulators. So was the April 18th test the only pre-race test, or was there something after the horse had been entered? As we know, in certain jurisdictions across the world, sometimes the pre-race tests occur the very morning of the race. And if those sorts of samples were being taken and accrued, we would maybe have a little bit more interesting information here. But I don't think that's the case. And I, like something that our organization has said quite a bit most recently, if you have opaque practices that you think are, you know, for the integrity of the game, they're useless. Okay, opaque integrity processes are really nothing. You need to have a degree of transparency. You need to build confidence in the public. And that is something that really just hasn't been happening here in this country for some time.
Interesting response from Churchill Downs, who've immediately suspended entries from Baffert's stable. And they've belt and braces that particular ruling by saying they won't accept entries from anyone associated with the stable. So it's not as though he can give the license to an assistant trainer, which is a loophole that's been used several times before in circumstances like this. Did that surprise you at all?
I wouldn't say it surprised me entirely. I certainly got the feeling that the statement from Churchill was almost a reaction to the fact that this incident was sort of hanging out there in the wind without any official recognition from the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission. I thought it was a very strong statement. It outlines the likely outcomes, which is that if this is confirmed to have been in the system of the horse at the time of the race, that it would yield a disqualification and Mandaloon would be the winner. I thought it was a strong statement and one that was done in the best interest of racing. Unfortunately, it doesn't have to happen that way, and that we could have a much stronger regulatory structure. It's one that I think we and many well-intentioned stakeholders in the sport would like to see. But I thought Churchill's remarks this morning after the press event at Baffert's barn on the Churchill property was at least as strong as it possibly could be, given the way in which events unfolded.
I think it was with a somewhat heavy heart that they issued this suspension. But I think talking to insiders at Churchill Downs, they felt this is what they absolutely had to do to preserve not only the sanctity of the race, but also the reputation of the sport as a whole in the state of Kentucky. And they've used an emergency measure effectively. It's not a rule, a specific regulation. It's an emergency measure, a condition of license, which says they reserve the right to refuse the entry of any horse at any time. It's a cover-all measure. What they've also done, Pat, of course, is thrown a hot potato in the direction of the officials at Pimlico, the Maryland Jockey Club, and the Stronach Group, First Racing, who now have to make the decision as to whether or to allow this horse to run in the Preakness Stakes, which again is going to have to be a sort of unilateral decision and not one that is governed by process or protocol. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's right, Nick. The First Racing, which owns Pimlico and the Maryland Jockey Club, have made a sort of a serpentine statement earlier saying, you know, we're going to look into this a little bit more and understand the facts a little more and speak to the Maryland Racing Commission. I think they're just trying to buy themselves a little bit more time to determine what to do. But the thing that I think needs to be well considered here is that Churchill Downs, as a corporation, the Stronach Group, now known as First Racing, as a corporate entity, have all been very heavily involved in the evolution of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority, which was recently passed into law in December of 2020, is due to be functional by July of 2022. These two corporate entities have been very strong in evolving and getting to this new national authority, and they kind of find themselves pointing fingers at each other. And as you rightly point out, the pressure from the Churchill statement is very clearly on Pimlico. Churchill Downs, where the race was just held, is saying, we don't want any more entries, at least for the time being, from Bob Baffert or his affiliates. What say you, Pimlico, coming up here in 1 week, where Bob Baffert was expected to have at least two entries in the race, not just Medina Spirit, but also Concert Tour? So the onus has clearly been placed on them. And by the First Racing statement coming out and saying, we're going to look in the direction of the Maryland Racing Commission, the Maryland Racing Commission is almost assuredly going to say, this process isn't played out yet, and we could happily accept the entry. I don't know, happily is the right word. We could accept the entry, perhaps grudgingly. But as of this time, I mean, it would have to be a house rule like what Churchill instituted to say, well, we don't want anything further.
This is a fascinating case, as well as a quite a depressing one. First Racing also operate Santa Anita, where Bob Baffert is primarily based. So if they're going to take sanctions against all his runners at Pimlico, they surely, for consistency's sake, should try and affect that with the California Horse Racing Board at his home track at Santa Anita. So I'd ask you, Pat, as someone who's advocated unification and harmonization of regulations across the United States, because this is the biggest trainer, the face of racing, in the biggest race, and this is the most high-profile case of its type there has ever been, do you think this is going to represent a watershed moment for the regulation of horse racing in the United States?
Sadly, I hope so, Nick. I hope so, you know, with a heavy heart. But I would like to think that the passage of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act of 2020 was going to be part of that watershed moment, but there's a lot of racing under the bridge between then and now. We're in the heart of it now. And I would like to think that because of it finally happening in the biggest race with the most well-recognized name and personality in the American sport in the last two decades, a two-time Triple Crown winner, a seven-time or at least six-time Derby-winning trainer prior to this, the person people know and recognize affiliated with the sport who has been affiliated with other issues, other positive tests, and certainly some suspect performances and results from various racing commissions. It's just a matter of time before one finally seems to blow up and brings us the change that is necessary, and this may be the one.
In previous cases, Baffert's defense for medication violations has normally been that there's a contaminated sample, as we saw in the lidocaine case, which he appealed successfully in Arkansas with Gamin and Charlatan. In this case, he has specifically said and denied that this horse has ever been administered the drug that he has tested positive for, albeit to a very, very small amount. This is a high, high stakes game now, isn't it? Because if Baffert is telling the truth, it undermines the entire regulatory system. But if he can't prove that, he's putting himself in an almost untenable position.
Yes, and to put it, just to turn it around to another situation your listeners are probably familiar with, we had the indictments in March of 2020 with Jorge Navarro and Jason Service, amongst a group of many others, including some from the standardbred racing community, indicted on a variety of charges, and no laboratory anywhere ever caught their use of illicit or performance-enhancing drugs. That was not what led to that federal involvement. So I think it's particularly notable here that you have a trainer saying, I never gave it. The results are clearly that this was in the horse's system. But frankly, it doesn't matter how it got into the horse's systems unless it was something otherwise, it's some degree of tainting or some other illicit act, fraud. If it's in the horse's system at the time of the race and it's against the rules of racing as they exist in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, the horse should lose the race. I think that's pretty clear and simple, and the Churchill statement from earlier today, I think, makes that clear as well.
What did you make of Bob Baffert's sort of motif there that recurred through the news conference, that he was the victim of systemic failure, really, rather than the instigator of it? He was almost portraying himself as a sort of passive player in this piece.
I think what is undoubted is that Bob has found himself in this position far more than any other trainer with big race-related positives than probably anybody in the history of the sport. I think that would be a fair way to put it, right? You have the Santa Anita Derby came into question with Justify, last year's Kentucky Oaks, the Arkansas Derby, now the Kentucky Derby. We're talking about major grade one races, multi-millions of dollars of prize money on the line. And you know, Bob does end up both winning these races and having to deal with the pharmacological after effects. It makes it seem as though they go hand in hand. So if you're Bob, if you're sitting there as Bob Baffert, you think they're always coming after me if I am truly clean, which is a question that I could certainly think that if Bob believes that his operation is clean and that this is not what he has done or the people that are working for him have done, then of course he's going to feel sympathetic for himself and try to portray that. The fact that no significant penalty has been assessed for any of these would probably make him believe even farther that he is innocent. And so it is very natural for him to play this role because he's seemingly maintained that in all of these other cases too. Again, we're talking about different rules, different states, different approaches, California, Arkansas, Kentucky. They all approach this somewhat differently, and that is part and parcel of part of the problem of American racing.
This offence, if it is proven, is not in the same ballpark as what was being alleged of Jason Service or Jorge Navarro. But does the American public know that or care?
I am fairly certain that there are some big national publications that are forthcoming that will be delving into the topic a little bit more and raising the consciousness of the American public to these issues. That said, they don't know Jorge Navarro or Jason Service, but almost everyone identifies or could identify Bob Baffert. Anyone who has peripherally seen any little bit of horse racing on television in this country And we just did hear about how great the ratings were for the 2020 Kentucky or 2021 Kentucky Derby. Bob is recognizable, and that tuft of hair makes him very easy to identify. He is the most recognizable face in the sport, and that, you know, I would argue that that this far outweighs anything that has happened up to this point with the Service and Navarro indictments and all the related indictments, which were still going on now 14 months after they've come down with frankly little action so far.
But I suppose the point I'm getting at is, can people distinguish, or do they even feel like distinguishing between somebody giving horses some exotic formulae that are specifically designed to make the horse run faster, or trainers who are allegedly dancing close to the medication line in terms of withdrawal? You and I, as horse racing fans, know that the intent and severity of those two things are rather different. But does a wider public even care? A drug cheat's a drug cheat's a drug cheat to them.
Agreed. That would almost assuredly be the mainstream public perception in this case. And horse racing has pretty much terribly done a, or has pretty much done a terrible job of being transparent on any overage, on any violation. Getting information out about these things is very suspect. We don't have a lot of independent media coverage on the topic, and so when these incidents do arise, they become news because we're not accustomed to dealing with the coverage or the questions, or can easily point to other reports that have been published in the past that really make it very clear how we handle these incidents. There is no nationwide uniformity on any of that, and that, again, is, I think, part of our longstanding problem and issues. And if we want a better future for the sport than we have at the present, it has to come with more nationwide unity on reporting and transparency and building confidence among our stakeholders, because the public will be the ones that abandon us, and that will have a massive negative trickle-down effect for everyone associated with the sport.
Okay, best guess, Pat, how are the next few days going to play out? I should ask, how are the next few hours going to play out? By the time you listen to this, it'll probably be already out of date.
It could be. I personally, look, I don't know what Maryland's going to do, and the reason I would say that is because there is this seeming allegiance between the different major racing jurisdictions and corporations, Churchill, First Racing, and the New York Racing Association. Of course, they're also involved in this in some way, shape, or form, right? They'll have to make a decision as to whether or not they allow Baffert entries as well. But the fact that all three of them have been unified through work on the Thoroughbred Safety Coalition and then through the work in getting the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act passed and launching this new authority, and their support behind it was really crucial. How Maryland will act in the next 2 days, I don't think is predictable at all. But if we looked at this in the past, I would easily say, yeah, Baffert's going to be able to enter his horses in Maryland, no problem. The Racing Commission will say there's no reason we have to deny this man the entries.
And there's an interesting precedent of sorts here, because if you were going to liken Churchill Downs' actions today in suspending Baffert, you might liken it to the decision of then the Stronach Group, now First Racing, to expel Jerry Hollendorfer from Santa Anita, when there wasn't really a precedent for them to be able to do that, and it was pretty much unilateral action.
And it continues to be in effect to this day, and without really much follow-up on all of the incidents that were related to it. So, you know, also you have this, you know, put aside the Service Navarro story, the Hollendorfer stories, put aside the development of this new Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority. We still have been fighting an ongoing battle with animal welfare groups who really want the complete demise of the sport. And in some respects, you know, their points are valid when you face a sport from time to time that doesn't seem to be able to police itself. And so, you know, this is going to be a field day for those organizations who are going to point to racing and saying, these entities, these organizations really have little ability to manage this on their own at present. This has been a multi-year problem. I would say dating back to the beginning of 2019 when Santa Anita had all of those incidents, breakdowns in their winter meet. And here we are more than 2 years later, and I think we're still going to face the after effects of that.
And every time horse racing thinks that it's out of the woods, another catastrophe seems to hit.
Which is why you need to be as transparent as possible whenever the hits come. And we do a terrible job, particularly in this country, of being transparent. You need to be open. You need to engage people. You need to communicate. We do a horrible job of that.
Pat Cummings, thank you very much.
Thanks, Nick.
Pat Cummings, Executive Director of the Thoroughbred Ideas Foundation. It's a fast-moving story, so much more to digest, and plenty to look forward to this week as well on home soil. We'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.